If you need a new roof or a repair, Easton Roofing will take care of you. Estimates are always free and suggestions are built on integrity. Visit EastonRoofing.com for more information. Get back to business faster with Easton Roofing. Easton Roofing. Integrity matters.
Impress your friends. Amaze your coworkers. Make your family proud. Here's what you need to know.
I'm going to tell you what you need to know.
All right, start things off here on a Thursday. You need to know, watch the low-lying areas and the water. It is no joke out there. Serious with the water level going on out there. Also need to know, our friends at Big O Tires have you covered. You got a big O-no with your vehicle? Get to Big O Tires. They've got a big O-yes for you right now. No interest if paid within the full 12 months on the purchase of $500 or more using your Big O credit card. Take advantage of that right now. 3-year warranty included with the purchase of Big O brand tires. You can do that. It is Big O Tires, 16 locations around the metro area, ASE certified technicians. That is what you will find on every make of vehicle, and $150 in savings. No interest if paid in full within 12 months on purchase of $500 or more. So if you got a Big O no with your vehicle, get to Big O Tires. Go to BigOTires.com to find the location nearest you. Let's get things started with the Chiefs assistant coaches. They were made available today. Matt House, the linebacker coach. Interesting that he's the linebacker coach, because now more than ever, positionless football, right? That's one of the things we talk about all the time. And we know safety's coming down, playing linebacker. Yeah, there's all these different flooding the field with these defensive backs. So I asked House how they handle that, you know, hybridization, if you will, with the different positions and you know, guys from different rooms, right, different positions. What is it you do in handling guys that are playing a linebacker position but really are listed as safeties?
Yeah, that's a great question. And really, that's kind of how the game's evolved and developed, right? So there is a lot of trading players, so to speak, right, where you move them around from room to room. And I think that's one of the things that Spags does a great job as far as teaching within our defensive scheme the concepts, not necessarily just a position, memorizing a position. You know, when we're in this coverage concept, this is what this position's doing, but that could be a wide variety of people in that position. And then, you know, the great thing is we don't have a whole lot of egos on the defensive staff. So we're constantly moving guys around during individual in order to make them not only best suit them for their talents, but to help all 11 on the field and the team.
You know, I like what he said about, you know, we're teaching the concept, but you got to teach it to multiple guys. Guys that are figuring out their run fits at linebacker have also got to figure out their coverages, and likewise the coverage guys, and here's how we want to cover this, and here's where we want to force them in this play. You know, take the outside shoulder, we want to make sure they can't get outside, or take the inside so they can't get inside. Got to go through that. But then a guy, you know, is going to have to step up and say, okay, I've learned all those different things. Now I've got to figure out, you know, how to go do the run fits. I mean, I do think it's gotten a lot more difficult now to make sure you get everybody on the same page, because you're asking so many guys to do so many different things.
And it requires a really good assistant, but not just assistant like coordinators, but really, really good position coaches. That's becoming more and more of a probably why some of these guys are becoming bigger stars than they were, being more notable, because more is required of them, and the best ones and get a lot of credit. And I'm sure it changes to some extent the kind of players they're looking for when they go into the draft. Not only does this guy have the skills to do multiple things, but is he coachable? Can he adapt to two different things and the kind of compressed nature that they're forced into?
Yeah, I think, you know, number one, you got to be a brighter guy to play football now than you had to in the past. And, you know, if you want to get that athlete that maybe is a guy that it's harder for him to learn on what he's got to do, that's where you want great teaching when it comes to your coaches. Yep. And I think it's one of the things in listening, and we're going to do more on the college football coaches rankings. We're going to do more on NFL coaching rankings here coming up. But, you know, you've you've got to have guys. Like, a head coach's job is not only – it's not just to pick the quarterback and to come up with plays, but it's to pick the assistant coaches that can carry out what you want to do. You can't do everything. And so building a good coaching staff and then coaching up your coaches, teaching them what you want, that is a big part of being a successful head coach. And I think that's one of the things that Andy Reid does really well. I think he identifies good coaches, but he also makes those coaches better.
It's like organizational guys in baseball. It isn't just enough to have like hitting coaches at various levels, but you've got an organizational guy that makes sure that the double A is feeding, or A is feeding double A, and double A is feeding triple A in the majors. The same philosophy throughout the organization. It isn't just individual guys. You got to make sure that they're going through the pipeline with the same philosophies.
Yeah, you got to all be on the same page. And I like what he said. Did you notice he said, you know, we have a coaching staff without egos?
Yes.
I mean, like, you're like, well, why would you have, what do you mean egos? Well, when, like, you come over, when you're Matt House, and you want to go over to Sam Madison and say, listen, I need Daniel Sorensen in here because we're working on this. They go, no, sorry, he's a safety. He stays here. Like, you got to find time. You got to be able to work together as a coaching staff to make sure that guys that you're asking to do different jobs can come figure out all the different things they want to do. All right, one for Brendan Daly, defensive line coach. As we know, that was a big get for the Kansas City Chiefs when they were able to get him away. So, Steve Spagnuolo, having worked with Brendan Daly before, previous to last year, he was with the New England Patriots. But one of the things I'm interested in as they continue, Steve Spagnuolo's trend has always been to have these long and leaner defensive linemen, 6'7", 267. I know that doesn't sound lean in the real world, but in a game where there's lots of guys in the 290s and 300s, you know, having a bunch of guys in that 260-something, 270-something, I believe that Chris Jones weighs 275 to 285 during the course of the season now. He's no longer the 310. He's done a lot to just get in great physical condition. There's a guy, Taco Charlton, fits the look of what a Steve Spagnuolo defensive lineman looks like, and that's a long defensive lineman. I asked him about that length, about defensive lineman with length, and if there's more to it than just being able to put your arms up.
In my experience, there's, you know, first of all, length is an asset if you use it correctly and you use it well. If you don't use it, then it doesn't serve much of an advantage. In my opinion, it all comes down to technique and fundamentals. And you're right, there's a lot of, particularly you see young players who got great size, great length, but their pad level's high. They don't play with great power, great leverage and strength, and therefore their length is negated. It can definitely be an advantage in terms of creating separation and extension in the run game and creating operating space to locate ball carriers, to get released off of blocks and put offensive blockers in a disadvantaged position. It absolutely is an advantage in pass rush if you use your hands, if you're able to develop some of the techniques with stabs and long arms to effectively use that length. It's a huge advantage. That being said, it comes back to the technique and fundamentals. And I would argue that there's some really good football players that don't have that type of length necessarily, that based on their technique and fundamentals play just as effectively as guys that have, you know, longer limbs and stature.
Rule of thumb, big guys beat little guys. That is a Bill Belichick and that is a Nick Saban adage that they will tell you. Nick Saban will not recruit a corner under 5 feet 11 inches tall. Now, he's able to shop at the top shelf of cornerbacks when it comes to who he's going to put a scholarship offer out there to. So I do think that's important. I mean, it's one thing to say that. If you're a smaller school, your Temple, you can't have that view because there's some really good 5'8", 5'9 corners that Nick Saban's not even looking at that could be the best player on your defense, so you got to go get him. But overall, size matters, right? A good big guy is going to beat a good little guy, right?
Yep.
You need to be a great little guy to beat a good big guy. And I get that, but there's a lot of people. One of the things I talked about beforehand where he kind of got into the leverage and everything, and people have heard this that have followed football for a long time. You know, when you are tall, you tend to play high. And you don't play with the same kind of leverage. It's great that you have that arm length, But if you stand straight up and an offensive lineman can get into your body, that arm length doesn't do any good because you've got to have the arm length out and extended with leverage behind it. And I think the Chiefs coaching staff does a really good job of teaching these guys that are long, that are tall, to play with leverage. Because if you don't have that, it's not going to work. So they've got a guy that they're looking for. I think they've been willing to give up that pure, stout run defender in an effort to make sure that they've got always good pass rushers on the field. And I think it'll be really interesting. We talked about this. I think the Chiefs should be talking to Jadeveon Clowney. At least kick the tires. Find out where he's at. If he's still asking for $20 million, walk away. But it's been a long time since anybody was talking about giving the $17, $18, $19, $20 million. And the Cleveland Browns have supposedly made the best offer. If you could get a long, lean Jadeveon Clowney and you can grab him, maybe that is. If you're at an impasse with Chris Jones, maybe that's a way to still get more talent on your defensive line and walk away from Chris Jones. I'd rather have Chris Jones than Jadeveon Clowney, but if Clowney's going to come at 50 cents on the dollar, I'd rather have Jadeveon Clowney. And I think it's the Chiefs would just be doing their due diligence to find out what it would take to get Jadeveon Clowney and add him, another long defensive lineman, to this mix. All right, Charvarius Ward for the Chiefs last year, one of the real finds, played great as a corner for them. What can he do after building on his first year as a starter? Sam Madison talked about that today.
You know, his confidence is very high, you know, but now, you know, it's going to be a lot of expectations placed on him, you know, just because the way that he played last year, you know, we didn't understand and know exactly, but, you know, he went out there, beat them, they talked about it, they ran and they raved about him, and, you know, he showed up. Game in, game out, have some good, but he has to do it consistently, you know. So that's what, you know, growing up in the NFL and getting to the next level is really what it's all about. In perfect position throughout the course of the season and plays, but, you know, ended up with pass breakups. He had to come down with those turnovers and you know, making those big plays down the field. He made a few last year, and now it was an opportunity in game situation for him to really understand how to make those plays. But with him getting all the reps that he got last year and all the different calls that we've made, now Coach Spags, because he understands the system, will be able to put some little spins on different stuff, and these guys can go out there and still play fast and execute the defense at a high level.
Charvarius Ward was a big linchpin. I mean, he brought it all together. You know, they would have been really looking for that second corner. Remember, this is a guy that was an afterthought when he was acquired and is now considered to be one of the better young corners out there. And I think as a guy, as we mentioned, they gave their top players, top 100 under age 25. We read through that one list, or top 100 players in the NFL, I think it actually was. Was it just top one? Yeah, it was top 100.
Yep.
Yeah, top 100. And said that he would be a guy that would be in consideration for it. He'd also be in the top for under 25. They just did the 25 under 25. But you extend that list out, you don't have to go very far before you get to Charvarius Ward.
And he fits that bill size-wise, too, that read 6'1", 200. He's the perfect corner.
Yeah, he's exactly what you want. And one of the real feathers in Brett Veach's cap for going out and being able to get him.
Parker Anger.
Yeah, Parker Anger for Charvarius Ward. Cowboys could use a corner right now. They just let Byron Jones go to the Dolphins this past offseason, and it's a need for them. They had him, but they traded him for Parker Anger. Speaks to knowing what you got when they're sitting there on your roster. They didn't seem to know what they had at that time. Let's talk running backs. Dylan McCullough, the running back coach for the Kansas City Chiefs, certainly very excited about having Clyde Edwards-Helaire to work with, to coach. Not sure, though, yet about the comparisons to Darren Sproles.
You start looking at stature and you start just, you know, comparing guys to other people. I don't know. I mean, you see those, you know, you look at the stature and the body build and everything. Yeah, you can start doing those things. But until I'm on the, you know, get him on the field on this level, you know, and we start doing some of the things we ask him to do on this level, I don't think that's a fair comparison until Clyde actually put his cleats on and put a Chiefs uniform on and go out there and start balling, which I expect him to do, and then we'll go from there.
I like the stop and start comparison to Darren Sproles. You know, I like the Darren Sproles smash together with Kareem Hunt. He's much more elusive than Kareem Hunt, but not nearly as you know, packing as much of a punch in running through guys. He carries much more of a punch than Darren Sproles did, but not as elusive as Darren Sproles. To me, he's a great blend of the two of them, and not I think bad. He's a perfect fit. No, and he can catch the ball, right? Yeah. He can catch the ball. That's a big part of it. All right, one more. I'll let you hear. Tiger fans will enjoy this one. Andy Hill, now on staff as the associate special teams coach for the Chiefs, talking about his new boss, Dave Tobe, has been a friend for a long time, all the way back to when they coached together at Mizzou.
Well, I'm in my basement right now, and Dave Tobe, before he got hired by Andy Reid in Philadelphia, was finishing up my basement. And if you ask about half the people in Columbia, Missouri, if you have a house addition or a basement finish, Dave Tobe was probably doing that the time he was here. But yeah, Dave and I have kept in great touch. You know, when he was lucky enough to get into the NFL with Coach Reid back in Philadelphia. I didn't ever go out to Philadelphia, but when he got hired at Chicago Bears back early in the 2000s, I went up several times to visit him and all their other coaches, because I was coaching some special teams at the time, but also a different, mostly wide receiver, but different positions. So I would go with the Bears, and then I've been very fortunate the last couple of years when he's been with the Chiefs in Kansas City. I recruit Kansas City for the Missouri Tigers back then, and I would stop by practice when this time of year, actually, after Memorial Day, when they were in phase three of OTAs, and I had a chance to go by a practice or two the last couple of years. We had always Jeremy Maclin and Chase Daniel and Mitch Morris and some guys, and so it was very fortunate to get in there and see them, and that's been our relationship's been pretty much the same the entire time.
Andy Hill talking about Dave Tobe. Nice to know he's the fix-it guy. He's the Mike Boddicker.
That's exactly where I was going. Damn it, you beat me too.
Of coaches. Yeah, well, I'll give you credit. You were the one who said it first. I just didn't know if you were close by, but I wanted to make sure we got that in. He is the fix-it man. If you need a renovation, call Dave Tobe. He'll coordinate your kick coverage and build you a new bathroom. Good times. Good times, Andy Hill. This is a staff that I think really does get along very well. And obviously Andy Hill's background with Dave Tobe shouldn't be any problem with him getting along with everybody else. Plus, Andy Hill always was one of the most popular assistant coaches at Mizzou. When he'd come up here, you talk to the high school coaches, everybody loved Andy Hill. So he'll fit right in, probably could fit right into any team. That's just the kind of guy he is. Everybody speaks very, very highly of Andy Hill. So he will now be a part of the Chiefs coaching staff. We will take a break. Speaking of Mizzou, Athletic Director Jim Sterk joins us next here in the program.
The program with Soren Petro.
I don't know. I don't know.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB.
Welcome back. You're on the program here on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Soren Petro with you as we talk a little college athletics. We turn towards Columbia, Missouri. The athletic director for the Missouri Tigers is Jim Sterk, and he joins us right now on our Sprint guest line. Mr. Sterk, sir, thank you for the time. We appreciate it. How are you, sir?
Fine. Thank you. Thanks, Soren. Thanks for having me on. It's an interesting time, to say the least, and I'm sure you've got some good questions to ask.
Well, we'll try. I'll say that. And they are interesting times, and they're challenging times. There's no doubt. There isn't anywhere in athletic director school where they taught you how to deal with a pandemic, is there?
No, yeah. It's unlike anything anyone's faced maybe since 1918 or something like that, with the Spanish flu coming across. But I saw a picture of a game with, you know, people having face masks on. So I think it's something that, yeah, we're all learning. We're having to pivot and adjust depending on the information that we have. And probably the best thing is to, you know, if you can wait on a decision, do that, because things will change in a week, 2 weeks, a month, or whatever. And so that's kind of the standard for the day.
I'm curious, like, how much does an athlete, you know, it seems like, I think maybe now, the way I would view it anyway, I don't want to put words in anybody else's mouth, that times have been so good, right? We see that now facing challenging times. We look back and think about how great it was to whenever you want. Let's get a group of guys together and go watch a game and sit right all at the same table and cheer and, you know, root for the Tigers and do all that kind of stuff. And now how that seems like such a challenge and a frightening proposition as well. It's to me, you know, it's just changed the whole dynamics of things. how much do you sit and think in the past? Did you sit and think about, you know, what are the worst case scenarios, and what did we think the worst case scenario for athletics was before now?
Yeah, you know, I didn't too much. You know, I always wondered, you know, as far as, you know, we've been building and bonding a lot. And actually, when I was the AD at Washington State, went out to Ohio State and played, and their athletics director, Andy Geiger, at the time, you know, he was telling me at dinner that they had a $316 million debt. And I said, how do you sleep at night? And he said, well, I have 18 million people between, you know, within the 2-hour driving distance of Ohio State. And so all I have to do is open the door, you know. And so that kind of, you know, it continued, and people are bonding. And we've been pretty conservative, about in the middle of our SEC counterparts as far as what we've borrowed. But I, you know, it's dependent upon, you know, football, and football drives most of the revenues, the majority of the revenues in any athletics department. So it's an important piece, and we're looking at, you know, what is it going to look like in the fall, and what does it look like, you know, in the future beyond that too.
What does it mean if we have, you know, the worst case scenario of no football at all? What does that mean for SEC schools, for your SEC school?
Yeah, I think it's, you know, then you just, I don't know. You know, that's not a case that, you know, I'm not spending an inordinate amount of time thinking about, because I think we need to be prepared for how do we get to fall? How do we, you know, bring the student athletes and coaches and staff and everyone in safely? And then the next step of how do we safely have an event? And those are things that we're discussing, you know, and sharing information on SEC calls, you know, 2 or 3 times a week. And then obviously within our own staff. And then, you know, the good thing of this is the pro sports are starting to open up and trying to plan. And so there's a lot of information that's going to be shared. And like I said, a lot of the decisions we won't have to make till mid-July or August on how we're dealing with fans, but or how many will be able to be in, and that'll be dependent upon the county, you know, health director, and so a lot of factors, a lot of moving parts to it, but trying to keep up on it, and obviously have a good staff to work on it as well, and so we're trying to communicate with our coaches on a weekly basis, and you know, here's where we are, and here's how our repopulation plan looks like, and then by the next week, you know, a few tweaks to that. And so it's continuing to evolve. And I think people just need to know we're blessed to have MU Healthcare here right in Columbia, and have immunologists and people that are used to dealing with diseases, you know, and so we're taking advice from those folks and trying to move ahead.
We're talking to Jim Sterk, athletic director for the Missouri Tigers, here in the program. It seems like right now there are wildly different, you know, plans for trying to put fans in the stands at colleges. We know, we hear that there's different plans. We hear from people in the NFL, from the Pittsburgh Steelers, who are only offering, you know, 50% of their tickets right now for sale, to other teams that are offering all of them. You know, there's not that uniformity. We've got Arkansas's athletic director who is saying, we're preparing for every venue to be wide open. That's our plan, is that every venue is full capacity. On where we're going to, Ohio State, that's talking about having roughly a sixth of the capacity of the Horseshoe available. You know, I guess number one, do you have what you think is the best course of action, and how damaging is it to right now have different plans from different people, different messages being out there, that in this social media driven world, everybody can hear what everybody is saying whenever they seemingly want to?
Yeah, it's and that's just in the, you know, the stadium realm, you know, and healthcare,
right,
and how to deal with the pandemic. There's a lot of views and differing views on how you do it. And so what, you know, we have the good fortune of is not having to make those decisions right now, as far as what it's going to look like. But yeah, I can't see, you know, that, you know, we're going to have packed stadiums, you know, this fall, unless someone comes up with a, you know, a vaccine within the next couple of weeks and everyone gets vaccinated before September. And so I think, you know, those are the things that we've got to rely on. And so I think where and how many, that's going to depend on a lot of things, how we deal with the pandemic in the next month and 2 months ahead. And so we'll be watching, we'll be trying to adjust and pivot and make the best decisions we can as it gets closer.
Do you have a D-Day, a day that it's got to be decided on where, whether it's how you mail things out or having the time to get in front of, you know, your donors and your season ticket holders and how you're going to prioritize them? Do you have a date that you got to have that figured out by?
Well, I don't exactly. I think, like, by mid-July, hopefully we can make a decision on, you know, the season going forward at that time, or the third week in July. But obviously football practice is scheduled to start as first part of August, and hopefully we have things nailed down by then. But we'll be we're renewing season tickets and actually ahead of last year at this point, you know, stage of the game at time. So we're continuing to try to communicate and let people know that we're going to do it, you know, in the right way. And if there is no season, you know, if all hell breaks loose and there is no season, we'll either refund or apply it to the next year. But I think we're, like I said, we're planning on having a season. We're looking forward to going forward and excited about Coach Frankowitz and the team and all of that. But there's the track and field, and you've got soccer, and just, you know, the idea of, you know, questions about travel and how are we going to do this, and it just continues on every facet of sport. And so there's layers upon layers of things that we're going to have cleared up by September.
Jim Sterk is with us here in the program, the athletic director for the Missouri Tigers. Is this been made more challenging for Missouri because of the move to the SEC? And by that I mean, when you make the move, you stair-step your way into full SEC payments. And you mentioned the building and everything that goes on there. Certain, you know, there's the SEC level of facilities that are expected. And so this was a transition that Missouri made that was made because it was for better revenue with the SEC. But there was kind of a, you know, the cost of doing business first to then reap the rewards on the other end. Has it made it that much more difficult on Missouri because your revenue streams several years ago were not the full revenue streams that the other SEC schools were getting?
No, I think we've been able to increase revenues. Obviously, we're at a level that's close to the top 25 in the country as far as funding, and so you want to compete with the best. And I've always, you know, joked that, you know, the SEC is not for the faint of heart. You know, we have some folks in our league that have $200 million budgets, and we're at $100 million, and we'd be in the middle or upper end of most of the Power Five leagues. And so it's one that it is a great league from that standpoint. And obviously, Coach Pinkel had success, and we're looking to get back to that level, and we want to do that. But our folks stepped up significantly and created, allowed us to build the South End Zone, and it's one of the best in the country, and we don't have to take a backseat to anybody as far as football buildings. And so put us on a level playing field with the upper echelon of the SEC, and I feel really good about that. And we're able to recruit and bring people in, and I think that's showing benefits as we hired Coach Drinkowitz and the first class he's putting together.
Georgia was the one school I saw that apparently had, a for lack of a better term, $100 million rainy day fund. You know, when you hear that, I mean, you know, Georgia's also right next to Atlanta. You know, I know it's a very big, you know, university and with a lot of resources, as is Missouri, right? Yep. You know, you're obviously in the top 10% of all the schools, but then even in that, you know, like Cliff Hillig, who owns Cerner founded Cerner and owns Sporting Kansas City, is very rich. Then there's Bill Gates, right? He's even richer. There's kind of that level in the SEC. Is having a rainy day fund something that should become mandatory for these massive athletic budgets?
Well, you know, they're the outlier. They certainly, you know, as far as I haven't heard of anyone else having near of right. that. And we've had and still have a few million in a reserve fund, and we'll be utilizing that this year. But it's something you want to build upon and grow, and it should be a goal of every athletics department to have that kind of, you know, not that kind of reserve. I think that's excessive, but it certainly is coming in they're looking very smart right now that they started it, I don't know when, it 30 years ago or whatever. So I think that's positive for them, and but it's something to aspire to for certain.
I know I've joked that I have meteor insurance on my house, right? It's like, you know, I don't know if it's $2 a month or $2 a year or whatever it is, but I remember sitting there with my agent and he's like, you know, we could take it off, what do you want to do? And I'm like, well, I'd be pretty pissed if a meteor crushed my garage. And, you know, but obviously if anybody was injured, that's the ultimate thing, right? But if you lost your cars and you're not covered by meteor insurance, that would really suck. So give me the meteor insurance. And when I saw that Wimbledon and the British Open, who both canceled this year, didn't reschedule, they canceled because they had insurance policies against a pandemic. Is that something that's been out there for college athletics? Is that something that you think is going to be out there in the future?
Yeah, you know, the SEC, well, actually the most visible one was the NCAA had insurance on the men's basketball tournament, but only had of the maybe 800,000, 250 of it insured, and which then caused a lot of trouble across, you know, all of our membership. But the SEC has had event cancellation insurance, but now everyone's going to write into their new contracts, you know, does not cover a pandemic or COVID-19 type of thing. So there, it won't be in the future. I doubt if anyone will have something like that.
Yeah, interesting. I mean, it is one of those things. It's first time in over 100 years that something like that has happened. You mentioned the term Power Five, and some of the things that are being written now is that, and you mentioned the NCAA tournament, which that revenue gets shared amongst schools that aren't even eligible for it. I know from talking with the MIAA, which, you know, we're a fan of all those local
right.
schools as well, that they benefit from that NCAA tournament, but they don't generate any of the revenue. And while I love the idea of Northwest Missouri State and Pitt State, you know, benefiting and making their conferences better from that money, I certainly also get the idea of, wait a minute, we do all the lifting, we do all the work, we generate all the revenue, why aren't we getting all the money? It does seem to be that this is building towards something. People are talking about the next couple of years, that this may be, you know, hit the fast forward button on something that was 5 or 10 years down the road, but was inevitably down the road. Do you believe the Power Five breaking away is inevitable, and is it coming sooner rather than later?
I don't know about inevitable. It's certainly a possibility, but not something that's discussed on a daily basis or looked at it. But I think the autonomy that was granted to that group, the five conferences in some of the legislation, you know, has been beneficial. You know, right now football is run by the conference commissioners and all of the football bowl subdivision, and that's, you know, the autonomy five and the group of five. All of those schools are in that bowl subdivision, and football is run from there, and everyone receives a benefit from the football playoffs from that association. And so whether that, you know, is something that, you know, moves forward, you know, through the rest of the sports, I don't know. But yeah, it's certainly a topic for discussion.
Is one of the topics, you know, football and maybe basketball, maybe it's baseball as well, breaking away and forming their own associations with a for lack of a better term, a commissioner that governs them, and then the non-revenue sports maybe going back to being more regional? Maybe Missouri plays Northwest Missouri State and Pitt State in the sports that are not revenue generators, and then the big football and basketball, and maybe, you know, there's a, I'm sure maybe a couple other sports I should probably include in there that maybe are at least break even sports, that they go and do their own thing. Could we see that to where, you know, the travel, like, is it necessary for, you know, men's soccer to be traveling to Florida to play games when they could be playing competition-wise at a level that's right around their backyard? Could you see that as a possibility, kind of separating out the sports?
So during this self-isolation period, you've been thinking about all these scenarios that you've been spending time doing that?
I don't have a lot going on in my life when things are normal, Jim. It hadn't gotten a lot busier these days, yes.
No, you know, I think the regionalization of sports, you know, in maybe the Olympic sports or whatever, you know, could be something that, you know, the everyone's being hit with budget challenges with the pandemic and the downturn in the economy and all. So there could be more and more of that. You know, we're certainly encouraging that with our sports to, you know, if you can get a bus game, that, you know, that certainly is better. One for, you know, for controlling the situation, you know, more and as far as from a health and safety standpoint, but then also the travel and what that brings. So, you know, there's talk of that with some of the leagues, you know, teaming up and doing things differently in the future. And so I think there could be more and more of that as we head down this path over the next couple of years.
Yeah, it just to me, I mean, that you know, would it affect the level of competition? Like, how much? We know that if, you know, Missouri decides to line up and play against, you know, a Division II school, that there's a big difference. I mean, you can just look at the size of the athletes out there. But is there that big a difference, you know, to go to D2 track versus D1 track?
Yeah, they're not probably with the elite in D2, you know, and I've been at that level before, and there's some that certainly could compete at the Division I level and have success, and so there's a few, but you the numbers really get you. When you go to Division I, you have more of those type of athletes that are exceptional, and so you know, we've talked about that. You know, if you regionalize women's soccer, for instance, and you may not get the level of competition that you need to excel at the national level, and, you know, within your region. And so there'd be things to look at and how that could be done to maybe, you know, adjust that. But all those things are, you know, being looked at is for cost savings, as far as, you know, even the SEC looking at that and what we can do within our league to create savings and not create excessive travel.
I know the NCAA gave a date, and I apologize for not having that date. And then leagues are putting out dates that the campuses will now be open, and individual schools and states and governors. There's so many different people that are, you know, involved in this, are putting out dates like, okay, now it's open for quote unquote voluntary workouts. We have our young intern, Dorian. She played lacrosse at Connecticut, and I said, you know, when they have a voluntary workout, how voluntary is it? And, you know, it, not real voluntary was really where she got to it. So, you know, you're expected to be at that. You know, that's one thing in times where everything's perfect, where you have these great campuses with these great facilities. And, you know, listen, trust me, I wish I had a commissary to go eat at when I was in college. I probably wouldn't have been such a fatty. I wouldn't have been getting so many, you know, hoagies from the corner shop and everything. I might have eaten a little bit better when I was there. You know, that's not a bad deal if you got to go to the campuses and be a part of that during times where there isn't a pandemic going on. But how do you handle it truly being voluntary and a young person feeling like, man, if I don't go, I'm going to lose my scholarship. I'm not sure I'm comfortable. I'm not sure it's safe. I'm not sure I want to be around people. But I don't want to lose my scholarship. I need this scholarship. How do you handle that balancing act?
Yeah, that is. And you try to, you know, not create excessive expectations. But I think, you know, the student athletes at our level are trying to aspire to be the best. And so what we try to do is, you know, impact it in a positive way and you know, for instance, you were talking about the dates, and it was June 1st. The NCAA, you know, allowed, you know, on-campus activities, and basically that means, you know, opening up your weight rooms and tracks and fields so that student athletes can work out with, you know, with our strength and conditioning folks, and you know, it's as I hear from, you know, a lot of the student athletes, it'd be a heck of a lot better than being, you know, maybe in a local gym and things aren't controlled.
Sure.
And we'll have you know, kind of contained environments, if you will, and with stringent health guidelines. So we're looking at the best way that we can model it and bring in 10 at a time to a weight room and not oversaturate it and do things like that. So all of our folks, we spend a tremendous amount of time, our strength and conditioning folks and administrators have been working on plans so that we've phased in and we've started to have a few of our staff back in the buildings. And, you know, every day, for instance, we go to every building. It has medical area there. The trainers have, you know, they take your temperature with a, you know, infrared, and then you have a little sticker, and you're able to go in our sports park and be okay. And so we're monitoring that way, and I think we'll continue to ramp that up as our student athletes come. So there's pressure from this standpoint, but also it's not even at near the level of the internal pressure that our student athletes put on themselves to perform at a high level. And so we try to facilitate that in the best way and keep it healthy.
Do you have the testing that you need, or are you confident you'll have the quantities of tests it's going to take to have athletics going?
Yeah, we've got, you know, we're, like I said, we're blessed to have, you know, MU Healthcare, and right. And actually right in front of our softball stadium is a testing site. So we will be able to do that. Hickman High School, I think the state is putting an open one, free one out there June 1st and 2nd or something like that. So there'll be free testing there. I don't know how long they'll be able, you know, they'll continue that. But we're going to be screening, monitoring, testing, you know, all of those things on a continual basis so that we try to keep it as safe as possible.
We're talking to Jim Sterk, AD at Missouri. My last point here is Eli Drinkwitz. You know, I know there's tremendous excitement about him. I know it by all accounts. It seems like, you know, there were a lot of people that would like to have had him as their football coach. And so I know my friends that are Tiger fans are very excited to see him get going. But, man, it sucks. you step up to this level and you get this job, and now all your planning gets turned over on its head. How difficult has this been for Eli Drinkwitz to come in his first year and have everything be completely abnormal?
Well, the good thing, he had a couple months, you know, before, and has a staff that's a veteran staff, even strength and conditioning. You know, one of our leaders there was in the NFL, and so during the lockout, and how'd they bring the players back from that, and so those kinds of life experiences really help. And we have six of our coaches that have been coordinators at a Autonomy 5 or Power 5 school, so great experience on the staff, and he's a pretty special one, he'll have us ready to go, and I really look forward to the future under his leadership of the program, and I know our student athletes are really excited as well.
All right, Jim, I really appreciate your time. We're talking, as I said, to Jim Sterk, the athletic director. Before I let you go, though, I got to give you my final four quickies. Just tell me the first thing that comes to your mind, okay?
That's scary, yeah.
Yeah, no, it'll be good. First of all, on a day like, I'm not sure how bad it's been down in Columbia, but up here it has been nothing but rain. Do you own a boat?
I do not. I've owned two in the past when I was out at Washington State. So,
is it true the happiest days, two happiest days, day you buy it, day you sell it?
No. Actually not. I had a really good experience with it, yeah.
That's awesome. That's great. I love hearing that. All right. Tell me, are you watching the documentary Lance on ESPN? We're doing a little poll.
I did. Yeah, I watched that one. I haven't seen all of the Michael Jordan one. I have it recorded, but I haven't gone back and watched it all.
Good. I'm glad I'll answer it. It's interesting, man. And I figured a guy who stands watch on so many sports, you would certainly be taking a look at that. But, yeah, I'd encourage everybody to get a look at it. Seeing what these incredible winners are, and I know there's so much more baggage when it comes to Lance, but just the driven nature of what it takes to be one of the exceptional winners out there, you realize that it's a different breed that goes out and accomplishes those kind of things very quickly.
Yeah.
All right. Tell me, what's the hot spot in Nooksack, Washington?
There is no hot spot there. It's such a small little town. There isn't anything. There is something now up my crap. I can't remember the name of it. It's been a while since I've been back, but I should remember it. Actually, the school was the focal point. You know, as it is in small towns, it's a very small town, and the school was the focal point of our activities and families and all, going to games and things like that. So a gathering point.
Yeah. Okay. Interesting. And finally, what are you binge watching to take the place of sports? I know pretty much anybody I'm ever talking to is a giant sports fan, so that's generally where most of our eyes would be. But we've lost the ability to watch that sports. Have you any shows you've picked up? Anything you've binge watched you'd recommend?
I watched Yellowstone, and then I get upset that they don't finish it. You know, you have to wait till the next season. We watch. It's an acquired taste, Schitt's Creek,
yes.
and that was different, you know. But we kind of got into it as a family and watched that when I had the good fortune of having all my daughters around. So it was my three daughters, so that was fun. But those were a couple.
I like that. Now I have to go check both of them out because you have now seconded. I wait for a seconding of it. You're the second person on Yellowstone, the second on Schitt's Creek, so I got to check those out.
Okay, and then Ozark just, you know, scares the bejeebies out of you. You know, I had my good friend, my neighbor from back in Pullman, Washington, said, I just watched the first two seasons of Ozark. He goes, what's going on out there?
Yeah. Did you lie to him and tell him something like, yeah, Gary Pinkel lives two doors down from them?
I should tell them that. Yeah, that's good.
Hey, Jim, thanks so much for the time. I know these are stressful times for all of us, and I know there's a lot of things that all of you athletic directors are trying to navigate through. So best of luck with it. Let's keep everybody as safe as we possibly can, and hopefully we're watching some sports on TV this fall with the Missouri Tigers out there prominently. Thanks so much for your time.
All right. Thanks, Oren.
The program with Soren Petro.
If you're in the car and saying, I don't know what the hell you're talking about, and this is terrible radio, I agree.
Weekdays from 2 to 6 on Sports Radio 810 WHB. Almost done for the day, but there's just a few more things we'd like to share.
But there's still more.
Here's the kicker.
Here's the kicker of this whole thing.
On the program.
All right, first of all, we want to thank Jim Sterk for joining us there in the program, athletic director at Missouri. Good guy, and enjoyed the conversation. I think we, another guy that's like honest up front about what's going on. So it's good to talk to Jim Sterk, AD at Missouri. Of course, Good Sense, goodsensesubs.com. Grab it on your way home tonight. You can put your order in, pick your time. You definitely want to go by Good Sense tonight. They got their Good Sense to-go meals as well. Grab them right now, just $5 each, goodsensesubs.com. 11 teams have begun to cut minor leaguers. Remember when the pandemic started, yep. The Major League Baseball agreed to pay minor leaguers $400 per week through May 31st. That is going to end. 11 teams, including the Cardinals, Mariners, Brewers, Reds, Mets, Nationals, Orioles, Rockies, Braves, Diamondbacks, and Rays, did not hear the Royals' name in there, are cutting upwards of 50 players. A lot of negative reaction, like they're doing this to save $50,000 per month. Is that what's really going on here?
But not here.
I'll tell you what it does say. You find out who the real prospects are and who the guys are that are there just to provide them guys to play with.